Dr. Veronica is an MD. And for her, that means many dimensions. She's a surgeon, health coach, medical intuitive, and third degree black belt. Now she's here to talk to you about your health, your happiness, and your world. Are you ready to see clearly? This is Wellness for the Real World with Dr. Veronica on 920 The Jersey.
Listening again to Wellness for the Real World. I'm Dr. Veronica, medical intuitive, medical doctor, functional medicine specialist, homeopath. Yeah, that's a lot of stuff to tell you about. But I want to get as much information as possible out to you. So today, our topic is going to touch a disease that hits a lot of people's lives. If it hasn't hit you directly, first, I want to say, my wish for you is that it never hits you directly. Never, ever. But if it doesn't hit you directly, there's probably somebody close to you that it's hit, and that's the big C, cancer. So I'm going to tell a little bit of a story and a background about it. Cancer is one of those type of diseases where people know when they're going to have it and they're going to get it. And when I say they know, most people who have a disease like cancer, before they even get it, have had a death wish and harbored it inside. And people don't want to necessarily admit this. And this is why I'm saying it to you. Don't blame yourself. You didn't know what else to do. It just got so bad that you said, I want to die. And one way people die, they feel with getting a lot of care and dignity, is to have cancer. So think about even how we talk about anybody who has cancer that gets through the cancer. They survived. They were a fighter. Think about the accolades, the positive reinforcement and feedback that people get from having cancer and then getting to the other side of it with their life. So our whole conversation about cancer is just interesting. We have all kinds of organizations that are against it, who are fighting it. We have support groups out there. And then, of course, at the top of the heap are the physicians and other healthcare practitioners that are directly helping people through the disease. And they win some and they lose some. Now, I know about this directly. I wasn't a cancer doctor in my last life as an eye surgeon, though. I worked very closely with the Cancer Center of New Jersey, CINJ. Great place with great doctors. We're in the middle of New Jersey, and people used to feel like they have to run into the city one way or the other. The city, and it depends on where you are in New Jersey as to which city that is. It could be Philadelphia or New York. But the city, because they felt like you can't possibly get great cancer care in the middle of New Jersey. But state-of-the-art doctors who had been to fabulous trainings and on their own had done a whole lot decided they liked New Jersey. They wanted to put a great cancer center right there, and there they were. So how did I become involved? I was friends through my son. This is interesting. They were in when he was in kindergarten, there was a little girl that had a crush on him. Oh, she thought he was swabbing the boner. Debonair, swabbing the boner at five. She had such a crush on him. And it turned out that her mother and father were both physicians. Her mother, I met on a field trip one day. We were both out of our doctor role and in the room mother role, and we went on a K ride and started talking. And then one day I finally met her father, who is an oncologist, and he never was around, carried three or four pagers at that point in time. But he was always tending to his cancer patients. He was a oncologist, hematology oncology, where he dealt with the blood cancers, the leukemias, the lymphomas, you know, stem cell transplants, all that. And so his issue was he was relatively new there, and he needed somebody to look at all his patients who were having eye problems. And so I became his go-to eye doctor. I'd go to the hospital and see people for him. They'd send him to my office. But because I became his go-to doctor, everybody else would come in new and say, I need somebody to help me with the eyes. And so I became the doctor that would help people with any eye problems related to chemotherapy or their cancers. I've seen cancers in eyes. I just ended up with this little niche, which ended up being very heart-wrenching because I saw a lot of nice people who were going through cancer, and some of them ended up getting through and others ended up dying. The day that really changed my life was when I had a young man in there who had a leukemia, and we had a conversation, and I was with his mother was in there, and he was just so mature and so strong and not emotional, just very circumspect about going through the leukemia. And then one day we got a phone call and his family called and said, I need you to take his name off of your recall system. We can't have the reminders. He died. I went into my office that day. I still think about it. I get teary about this because a mother lost her son. I felt like a failure as a doctor, even though I wasn't primarily his primary doctor. And I knew his doctors, and I'd been to the hospital to see him. And that was what made me first run a marathon. Imagine that. I ran my first marathon the year after that for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society to raise money. That's how I started doing marathons. Then I realized I liked it because I felt like I got to do something. I didn't do anything in the office to be able to help. Those other doctors weren't doing stuff in the office that saved the 21-year-old young man who was still in college and talking about his next semester. So what else can I do? And so, you know, I'm a doer. I ran 26.2 miles and raised thousands of dollars for cancer research. That's how I started running marathons. So after running the marathon, though, I started realizing also that there was a lot about cancer that the general public doesn't get. There's so much out there that can touch you and help you that a lot of times you're not even getting in the traditional medical system. But you have to go in the beginning to stay alive. So then once you get through it, you can meet a Dr. Veronica or another functional medicine doctor who can get to the cause of the cause and help you keep your life. So after you meet Dr. Kevin Ryan, who has a book, Dr. Kevin Ryan was an oncologist and left oncology. And the sad about leaving oncology, but he left because he has to get out a bigger message. He has a book, When Tumor is the Rumor and Cancer is the Answer. Now, this man is absolutely brilliant. He's certified in three medical fields. He also has an MBA. He graduated with honors from medical school, and he was a colonel in the U.S. Air Force. Can you believe that? I mean, I'm trying to figure out how this guy. Now, I know a lot of doctors. And a lot of doctors, we got all kinds of stuff behind us. And it makes me feel like I don't have any qualifications at all when I meet people like Dr. Ryan. He's done work with monoclonal antibodies and tumor immunology. This is the hot thing these days. But he said, nope. I'm leaving that because I have a bigger message to get out there. And so if you want to know about him, drkevinryan.com, I'm giving you that up front. I'm going to bring on Dr. Kevin Ryan because he has a very important message for you because his whole life purpose is for you to live even when the big C comes in your life. Dr. Kevin Ryan, welcome to Wellness for the Real World.
Well, that was a wonderful introduction and also quite fascinating, and it's good to hear you cry, to tell you the truth. It really is, because I spent more than a few buckets of tears myself over 30 years, and that's keeping it real, and I very much appreciate that, very much. which really segues into the first thing I wanted to say to your audience, is that I'm not trying to sell books. There's audiobooks and ebooks, and they're like $4 or $5. If you want to buy the hardback and the softback, fine. What I'm trying to do is get the message out to the suffering folks, the people that are riddled with anxiety, because nothing like cancer, and every survey has shown this, creates as much anxiety as does the diagnosis of cancer. Not even number two, Alzheimer's, number three, a heart attack, combined, equal the fear that cancer conjures up. And it's anxiety. It's fear of the unknown. It's not fear when you know what you're afraid of. It's anxiety. And it's unknown because of the nature of the beast. It can hit any organ at any time, present with any symptom. There's nothing classic except for one or two syndromes. Other than that, it can be all kinds of things going on. And it's very frightening. It's something you can't see until it's far advanced, and then people think of loss of dignity, wasting, pain, and a miserable existence when they have the diagnosis. And this has been pervasive for decades and decades and decades of people have thought this. So the anxiety is enormous. Well, just as is true in anything in life, anxiety's best antidote is knowledge. When you have knowledge of what it is that you're going to be fighting, your anxiety becomes much more manageable, morphs into fear, because it is something to be afraid of, but it makes you fight. It gives you the power to stand up and to fight against that which you now know. Sadly, there is no text, there is no single resource that is compassionate and comprehensive and comprehensible for the cancer patient newly diagnosed and their loved ones, which is out there. There's none. So I wrote it, and it took years to do.
Well, thank you so much. You're talking about there's no good resource out there, yet here we are in the days of the internet where everybody has a PhD from WebMD and has been to the medical school of Google. And so talk about that a little bit. I think for us who are trained physicians with real background, where we're going to conferences. I mean, I go to so many conferences. I feel like I'm always on an airplane somewhere learning something more. Yet I have people want to argue me down with misinformation from Dr. Google. Talk about that in cancer.
Yeah, that's a phrase that I used when we met, which had a delightful summit not too long ago in New York. The power of pain and panic is never to be underestimated. All that has happened is that the internet has facilitated faster access to sticking pins in our eyes when it comes to cancer.
Oh, God.
Because all they hear is, I have breast cancer. Well, I could say you have a Ford. You don't know what kind of Ford I have. And even if I tell you what type of model, you don't know which one it is mine. And even if I tell you the color, you still don't know without the vehicle identification number exactly which one is mine. And even if you do, you don't know how many miles are on it. And I could go on and on with the metaphor. So people go to Dr. Google and they look up something about their particular disease when they have no specific information or direction, no guide, no one to help usher them through this wealth of knowledge. Or they go into complementary and alternative medicine, not understanding what that is and what it isn't and what its role is and what its role isn't. And between the two of them, they can arrive in your office, and in the latter case, it's at least 40% of the patients do that, and we don't know how many billions. The lowest estimate is $40 billion is spent on that. And they arrive in your office usually with a gaggle of family members, or at least one, but usually with more than one, worrying and fretting and crying in the waiting room, or in my case, I tend to bring people in if the patient wants that, because they are in charge. One of the most important first operating principles is recognize the autonomy of the patient. It's not what the doctor says. It's what the team decides, and the patient becomes the co-captain of the ship. And they come in with preconceived ideas. And you have to work your way through those and go straight at it. It's one of the first things I do after I bring the entire staff out and thank them for coming, and that usually disarms them, wondering why I'm thanking them, and I tell them because you could have chosen to go somewhere else. And then we go inside the room, and I ask if there's someone there to record what we say. And if not, I get them a recorder or at least a piece of paper and a pad and a pencil. Say, write down everything we talk about. I have nothing to be ashamed of what I say. I want you to remember it because you'll then know questions to ask, and our job is for you to get informed. And then I question things such as, what have you read? Who have you talked to? Tell me about Uncle Joe's Kickapoo Joy Juice and how it cured his, you know, mother's lumbago and, you know, is his father's liver cancer, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because I know they came out of the woodwork and have been telling you these things at the bridge club or the bowling alley or the wherever. And we go through that. And then I also talk about spirituality and physical space. And those who don't want to talk about spirituality, I say, that's fine. I make sure they understand I'm talking about purpose and direction in life. Why are you here? It's not the same, per se, as religion or theology. It might be for you, but by definition, it's not. And I explain to them, you may not deal with it now. It will most certainly deal with you. And then I ask them about physical space. Do you want me close to you? Do you want me sitting next to you? Do you want me standing across the room with my arms crossed and looking at you in the eyes? Do you want me to do my best, Marcus Welby pose? I mean, what is it that you really want me to do in terms of physical space? What makes you comfortable? And anyone you want to have in this room, as long as they are not destructive to the bond we are going to create and the family that we are going to create with my nurses and with the techs, and in time with the other patients, and the support group we're going to get you with, and the social worker that you're going to meet, and probably the psychologists that are going to help family members, because the patient has cancer, but the family usually has disease as a result of reacting to the family member with cancer, then we move forward. And if you spend that time, as many say, I don't have the time to do all that, and that's sadly the rule, you will save the time down the road. And frankly, if you don't save the time, the hell with that. Because this is a human life. This is a person who is fraught with anxiety. And we have all had it. And we know that it is completely disemboweling. I mean, it tears you apart. It sucks the soul right out of you. It slices your psyche into small pieces. And my job is to put that all back in so that they are ready for the fight. Because if you do your job correctly, you will never, ever see a coward with cancer, ever.
Interesting. So let's switch gears, because you said so many pieces and tidbits that I want to touch on. So first of all, you talked about the family with the disease. Mm-hmm. But you also were touching on, they came in with, you know, I don't remember what you call it, Uncle Juju's poop juice.
Uncle Joe's poop juice.
And so when we talk about, let's talk about first, I don't know which one is harder or easier when you're talking about what people are doing on their own, or, you know, we talk about complementary and alternative medicine. And I got to say, with people who come in to see me, because I'm now doing functional medicine, I always tell them they have to keep their other doctors, and that I'll tell them when they have to go back and get something. And they want to jump ship. They want to. But I insist that they don't jump ship, because I say we are all working as a team. There are no heroes and villains. We are all working as a team, and you need all of us. But talk about finding a good person who is trained in complementary approaches, because I find that to be really challenging now. Because everybody's a body worker and everybody's taken a course somewhere.
Right.
And I mean, I'm sitting at all these really high level courses saying, oh my God, I didn't know that. And learning more and more and more, you know, because knowledge, you can always. And then I have people who come with a certificate in I don't know what from where, who's a body worker, who now is the guru of the of people. So talk about how you direct people to find doctors that work in complementary field or other healthcare providers. It doesn't always have to be a doctor who work in complementary and alternative fields who are qualified to help them. How do you recommend that people do that?
First, you avoid the ones that wear turbans and have monkeys dancing around them, okay? Because that's a carnival, as you alluded to. That's people who just have a certificate and really don't have a clue as to what the hell they're doing. Second, you avoid people who think that they actually have the primary modality of care. No, they don't. People are more than mind and body, of course, but they don't have the primary modality of care. There are not any clinical trials which demonstrate remissions of cancer as a result primarily of complementary and alternative medicine. There are clinical trials which show that there is help for specific symptomatology and for the sense of wellness from complementary and alternative medicine. So it takes time. You use the usual resources, this time the internet. You talk to them. You interview them. You know, when you're a professor and a colonel and you've been at this a long time, you know, your integrity, crazy nut meter, you know, flickers. When it flickers, you realize, no. And you move on to the next person until you find someone, because you know your patient at least 40% of the time is going to go out there in the dark on their own. So you have to address it. And for a doctor, an oncologist, to be unaware of the high incidence of patients seeking this out, let alone how many, God knows, are using it, is really sticking your head in the sand and not very wise at all. So there is some work to be done. But once you've finally done it, it can be very profoundly rewarding. And as you said, a team can then begin to be built. If I encounter someone who thinks that they're going to remit a cancer as a result of CAM, complementary and alternative medicine, I feel like I want to shoot them. Now, that's the military in me coming out, so I apologize. I don't mean that literally. It's a metaphor. But because they can't. They absolutely cannot. There are spontaneous remissions that can occur, and certain malignancies far more than others, but no, they are not the primary approach to a malignancy, but they are nonetheless an important approach to a patient's malignancy, and also to their mind and to their heart and to their family, who's been pushing and urging, usually the case, well, you really ought to consider hypnosis, or you should really consider acupuncture. That's just a name, too, that particularly have a role for some patients. Or you really ought to smoke pot. You ought to be doing the doobie, you know, and so on, which in some cases for nausea and for weight gain and anxiety can have a role in certain patients. So you need to become informed in that way. And it's hit and miss until you finally hit. There's no magic formula.
So what I tell people, because I've had people come to me post-cancer, and because I've been traditionally trained, I know that you have, I insist, you're not going to come into me primarily. You're going to have an oncologist. So I'm not even going to talk to you if you're not under the care of an oncologist. But what I do tell people is there is something that got yourself in the state that allowed cancer to take hold. And so my working with you is to get you in a place where you can get better so it won't take hold again. And you have to understand that. So there's a lot of teaching and learning of here's what you can do and not do from a lifestyle perspective that makes it that you will be better off. Can I guarantee it? No, I can't guarantee anything. But let's work on those lifestyle factors, which most people need to work on, even though they think they know everything because they were at Dr. Google's office, they don't. And so those people who along with their oncologists, embark on the role to get their whole body healthier are the people who end up having less side effects and losing weight, not getting cancers again, all that other type of stuff, versus the people who think my answer is smoking the doobie.
Right.
So now what do you say about that?
I think that's fair. Again, you know, we're a composite being. You know, we're wonderfully and mysteriously made. And to think that our corpus, just the body, the cells, the nerves, the tissues, the sinews, are all that there is silliness. It's just sheer silliness. And to suggest that one's introspection, one's attitude towards life and towards others, one's attitude towards their disease and whether they stay stuck in the past or move forward beyond it has no role is also equal silliness. So I concur with what you said.
So I just have to, we're talking to Dr. Kevin Ryan. We're getting down to the bottom of our segment, drkevinryan.com. When tumor is the rumor and cancer is the answer, a handbook for people diagnosed with cancer written by a colonel, decorated colonel, who was also an oncologist and certified in three medical fields. He's saying it's not only about the chemo. It's not only about the radiation. It's not only about cutting it out. It's about figuring out the whole picture and finding also a practitioner who's willing to say, how do you want my demeanor to be that will help you heal? Because
that's
I'm impressed
true.
By that. I'm impressed by you. You let people decide how they want you to be.
I think that's very important because, you know, you walk in and all of a sudden the trumpets blare, you know, and the angels sing and the Mormon Tabernacle Choir fires off and the magnificent demagogue, M.D., has entered the room. What a crock of crap. You know, you're a man or a woman who's received specialized training and now have this human life that has been laid in your hands voluntarily. This is holy ground that you are on. This is very spiritual ground that you are on. And it needs to be treated as such. And they need to see that as such, even if they are initially stoic. You respect their stoicism. You don't criticize them for them. You treat them with love and with tenderness and with honesty above all. And they will almost always come around. I had a crusty old colonel who never came around until just the very end. And he pulled me into him and he had a gruff voice and he said, "Hey, you know, you did all right, asshole." And everyone was afraid of Colonel. I can't say his name. But everybody was afraid of this guy. But at the very end, you know, on his deathbed, that's what he said to me. And he was telling me, "I don't know how to reach other people, but you reached me. And I thank you. I thank you for that." And that leads to the point that you need to get these patients in touch with each other. The community of souls is an extremely large synergy where 1 + 1 = 3.
And on that note, Dr. Kevin Ryan, drkevinryan.com, we're going to have to say thank you so much for sharing with us. I really appreciate that you decided to switch gears to get the word out and the message out that there are doctors out there who cares. There's places you can go to get help when tumor is the rumor and cancer is the answer. Author Dr. Kevin Ryan, Colonel Dr. Kevin Ryan, drkevinryan.com. You're listening to Wellness for the Real World. I'm Dr. Veronica. You can find me at drveronica.com and be back for some more on another time. Wellness for the Real World. Every illness and injury has emotional and spiritual root causes in addition to genetic, environmental, dietary, and lifestyle associations. I'm Dr. Veronica Anderson, medical doctor and intuitive. I can help you identify emotional and spiritual links to your health issues. Receive new and different strategies to reach your health goals. Let me help you heal. Work with me by phone or online. Visit drveronica.com to schedule your medical intuitive reading. That's drveronica.com. Thank you. And this is Wellness for the Real World. Again, for some more information, we're going to talk today about fear. But before we talk about fear, I'll say, I'm your wonderful host. Yes, I am wonderful, and I can say it. I feel good about myself, and this is why I'm healthy, because I feel good about myself. I love me, Dr. Veronica. I'm a medical doctor, medical intuitive, and want to bring you all kinds of information to help you live a better life. Now, if you would like to hear a particular subject, I will go out and find the expert for you, but you got to send me a note so that you, so I communicate with you. So go to drveronica.com. You can contact me that way on the contact form, or you can go to my Facebook page, Dr. Veronica Anderson, or Twitter at Dr. Veronica IMD. And yes, I do read this stuff. I post all this, you know, I'm involved in everything. I don't just have somebody do it. So I am there behind the scenes, always watching what's going on and answering. So if there's a topic you really would like to hear about, or there's somebody that you've heard that's interesting, you say she should have this person as a guest, send it to me. I'm open because I love to learn. I love to hear all different types of knowledge, and fear is not one of my problems. So let's talk a moment about stress, because in America today, everybody is stressed, and busy. So what is stress exactly? Well, stress can come in three forms in a big picture. Let's zoom out to 60,000 miles or 60,000 feet off the ground in our fighter pilot jet. 60,000 feet. Fear, anger, sadness, that's emotional negative stress. But then there's chemical stress and physical stress, but we're not going to talk about that. So your emotional, every emotion that you feel, the health-harming ones are fear, anger, and sadness. The health-promoting ones, love, joy, gratitude. So we all want to be in the love, joy, gratitude, because that's what keeps our mind well, our spirit well, and our body well. However, life is full of ups and downs for every single human being walking the face of the earth. You think the Dalai Lama doesn't have stress? Yes, he does, but he knows how to deal with it. And this is why he can say these profound philosophical things. It's not that he doesn't have stress at all. He does. But I like to joke sometimes. I'm like, he don't have no husband. If he had a husband, he'd know what stress is. But anyway, and I love my husband. He's a wonderful man. But let's talk about fear, because fear is rampant. People are sending me posts on Facebook to tell me why I should take action about this or that that's happening, because we can't wait for this to happen. This is what I'm afraid of. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. And I'm like, that doesn't scare me. Nothing scares me. Now, it's not that nothing scares me. I hate heights. But I get over it enough so I can take action and I can do something. I can go on the roller coaster. I can go and, you know, to a housing site up the stairs with no rails on the side because I'm, you know, thinking about a property or whatever it is. I can do these things because I realize that what's happening with me is some emotion, some memory that's coming back, and a memory can be back from a past life. So fear. People live their life day by day worried, fearful of stuff. And so you got to get over it. But people say, well, how do I get over it? I have these memories. And some of the memories, like I said, can come from past life. Now, you guys are going to really appreciate this. This is for the men in the audience. This is for the men in the audience. Are you a golfer? So my next guest, she was a pro golfer. How you like that? Wouldn't you love to have a woman like this, a pro golfer? Like, no, you wouldn't, because she'd beat your butt and you'd be embarrassed that a woman beat you. So pro golfer, Calliope Barlis, B-A-R-L-I-S, buildingyourbest.com. I'm going to invite her on, and she's going to say her name.
Calliope, or Calliope. At least that's how my mom tells me it's pronounced.
Calliope Barlis. Her website, buildingyourbest.com. I'm so happy that she was really good at branding herself, that she has a beautiful name, but understands it might be challenging for some of us. Buildingyourbest.com. Welcome to Wellness to the Real World.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Dr. Veronica. I just love your show. I love what it's all about.
Well, thank you so much. First, before we get started, you have to give us a little bit of background about your name.
Oh, my parents are from Greece, and it's one of the seven muses, one of Zeus's daughters of love and poetry.
The love and poetry, that's what your name, the deuce, is a muse, or what is it?
That's right. It's one of the Greek gods' daughters, Zeus.
Ah, Zeus's daughter. Okay.
That's right.
Got it. Oh, very cool. All right. So whenever you name your child, give them a name on purpose. And I'm sure when your parents name you, they gave you that on purpose. Why? You've heard Sharon Lynn Wyeth, where we talked about how names impart your life purpose and your imprint. So when you name your child, think about it very carefully, very, very carefully, because you are setting into motion their life purpose because it's written seriously in their name. So I know you're a phobia relief expert at this point in life, but let's go back because you're a pro golfer. And first, a woman pro golfer is not usual. So tell us how you got to that point in life.
Well, I didn't grow up with the game. It's a funny story because I just had a calling. It's something I had to do in my 20s. And I met a coach who didn't teach me a whole lot about swing mechanics, but instead he taught me NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, which is a set of skills on how to think successfully. And basically, when I realized it wasn't my calling to be a pro golfer, I use the skills now to create well-being in people, because too often they're stressed out, and they're stressed out because they're thinking about things that stress them out in a certain way. So I help people become more aware of how they think so they can respond better to it and have more control over their lives.
Okay, so you're saying you went to learn golf, but what you really got out of after you got really good at it is your teacher was teaching you NLP. Now, was that on purpose or was this like a side hobby and that your teacher was doing?
Well, actually, he never said it was NLP. I only later found out that it was. But he was coach to a lot of the PGA players and LPGA players, and all he would do was talk to us and talk to us about our attitude, and specifically about what to focus on versus what not to focus on, because too often people talk about what they don't want instead of what they do want. Well, in golf, let's say, for instance, people would say, I don't want to get the ball into the water. Well, right, so if you say that, most of the time, like 100% out of 100% of the times, the ball will go into the water because that's what you thought about. Because the brain doesn't know about, I don't want it. It just hears what you do want. So what was better was, well, I want the ball to go into the hole. And that's what would happen a lot of the times. And, you know, I can say for myself, I got six holes in ones in the first 6 months I was playing just because I thought about what I really wanted to happen instead of what I didn't want to happen.
So there are some people who are, it seems, they're born positive, and other people are born negative. They've just always been like that. Talk about that for a moment. Is it that way? Are some people wired? Like, I'm a wired optimist. I just know that the universe is conspiring for me, and it's going to work out fabulously. So when everybody thinks, oh my God, it's going to be horrible, I'm thinking, no, it's not. Somehow this is going to work out fine.
So, that's right. And I can really appreciate that because I'm definitely an eternal optimist myself. I always know that in New York City I'm going to find a parking space, and for whatever reason I do, because I believe that it's true. And basically what you're saying about you being the most wonderful optimist, the good news is that anybody who isn't can always learn how to be an optimist by paying more attention to people like you who are an optimist and how you're doing it, how you're thinking, not necessarily what, but exactly like how you're thinking that everything is going to work out in your favor. Because, like, for instance, before I leave my house and I'm going into New York City, I can see a parking spot waiting for me where I'm going, and it usually happens. And so the more you set a destination for your brain, the greater the ability to actually achieve it.
But now the people on the other side don't necessarily call themselves the pessimists. They call themselves the realist. I'm just realistic. What do you say to that? She's airy fairy. That's not realistic.
Well, what's real is how they're thinking. And if they're thinking that they're not going to get what they want, then they won't. Because let's put it this way. The minute you start thinking about what it is that you do want, that can become real. And that's realistic. Okay? And if it's in your control to actually get it. Now, you know, there are certainly things that are not in your control that we'll never get. But once we realize that something that we want is in our control, then we can definitely get it. And that's being realistic, too.
So let's talk about how you're talking about phobia relief. And there's lots of people who are fearful of all types of things. Rational. Sometimes fears are rational to be, you know, you see something out there. Everything says it's going to go this way. And so therefore, you're fearful because what's to make you think it's not going to go that way? So what makes it, how do you get from being like really scared? And there's a difference between just being really scared and a phobia, but from being really scared to switching it around. What can you tell us about that?
Well, it's very simple, because most of the time when people have a phobia, and I'm talking about the fears that really hold people back, I'm not talking about the fears that keep people in safety, because I want people to have a fear of height so that they stay on the ledge in a safe place, right? But they don't need to stress out about and sweat. They can stand comfortably on an edge because they know they're going to remain safe. I'm talking about the fears that, let's say, a parent won't buy a dog because they're afraid of dogs, or they even see a picture of a spider when the spider isn't even there. Or I can even talk about a snake and someone starts sweating and panting and can't breathing. And most recently, clowns were a big thing. People were scared of clowns, and boy, I got a lot of people coming in for that. And most of the time with a fear, when someone thinks about what it is that they fear, it's a great big picture that's moving in towards them. And once I take that picture and shrink it down to, let's say, the size of a peanut, or the size of a dime, it loses the impact. It changes how the person's feeling so that you can start responding more rationally about what it is that you used to be afraid of.
Let's switch back over. You mentioned this clown fears that were going on, and I'm looking at it saying, wait, is this for real? People are scared of clowns? What was going on there?
Well, you know, I'd love to think that it's really just a bad makeup job that they were afraid of. But a lot of the times when I was meeting with people with a fear of clowns, it was that the lips, the hair, the huge makeup job was a great big picture just coming in towards them. And once we shrunk it down and then blinked it black and white, it changes the structure of the thought. Now, let's face it. Most clowns are not dangerous. They're pretty safe. They're made to make you laugh. They're meant to make you have a good time. I mean, the code of ethics of clowns is always to make the people have a good time around you. So, you know, when there are movies out there or ideas in newspapers that are putting these big pictures inside of our minds about how scary they can be and dangerous, then sometimes those pictures remain big. But once you shrink them, it gives you control over what used to make you upset.
Have you ever had any these type of fears in yourself?
Well, I used to have a fear of public speaking, but I do a lot of that now. And that and thankfully so, because I've realized that fears, there is hope with anybody who has fears. So when I had a fear of public speaking, it's just that I was thinking that people were bored whenever I talk. But once I started changing those thoughts inside my head so that they were actually excited about hearing me, that I actually had something, a message that would impact their lives in a positive way so that they could have greater happiness, then I realized that, you know, whatever it was that I used to think just wasn't so useful. But once I changed big pictures into big pictures of the people having fun listening to me, it made all the difference in the world. And here I am talking on your radio show.
Yes. Well, you know what's nice about radio? The audience is not there looking back at you. When the audience is looking at you, it's a little bit uncomfortable. and I do a good amount of public speaking. And there's always the before you're into it. So, you know, one of the techniques that it depends on how you've been taught to speak or learned or figured it out is start interacting with people in the audience. And once you make them real and you start interacting, everybody kind of relaxes and the whole energy changes. But you have to get over and say, okay, I'm going to talk to this person. Because I'll have somebody, I'll be doing a seminar or something like that. They'll be sitting there with their hands crossed, looking tough. And that's the person I'm going to go right for them. I'm going to go right for them. But I'm going to talk to them. Because I know when I relax that person, it's going to relax me. And I'm going to make them, and, you know, I'm going to walk and be friendly and ask them questions and what's their name. And, you know, a lot of times if I'm doing my own seminars, I'll have people's name tags on so I can call them by their first name and we can have a little chit chat. And so it becomes a fireside chat in the audience where I start talking to them and it's more conversational. And that's how even when you speak a lot, you're saying, oh, gosh, these people speak. I know people who speak a lot in front of thousands of people, and they still that funny feeling comes across them. So there are. It's almost like you're talking about your shrinking down technique, where what I do when I'm speaking is I kind of shrink it down to the scariest person in the room to me. Why am I fearful of that particular person? Because I'm concerned that they're not going to agree with what I say or like what I say. And, you know, even though I know I'm coming from a standpoint of knowledge, I don't know what are they thinking and are they going to accept what I say and all the other type of stuff. So once I fireside chat with them, and there's people that don't come around, but that's their stuff. I realize that's their stuff and not my stuff. But it's that it is really a shrinking down. So give us some examples of how you have helped people.
Well, I've helped people, and I have to commend you for what it is that you've done, because you've set an intention when it is that you speak and you hone in on that one person to relax them. And that must have an overall effect in the entire room, that once that person relaxes, everybody else relaxes as well. And what I think is wonderful is that you have targeted someone to make them relax, and that you are successful in doing it. Because the brain works in such a way that once you set an intention, it searches and sorts for the way to make it happen, and eventually it will happen. And to answer your question, I usually have an intention with any client I have, whether it's one-on-one or with hundreds of people, that they're going to walk out of there happier than they did coming into the room. And because I'm on a mission to really make this place a happier planet. You were talking about stress before and how people are stressed out. And, you know, back in the 1950s, the American Medical Association came out with some results from some research they did saying that stress had a direct impact on health. Well, what would be even more wonderful is if they made a project about how happiness affects health. Because physiologically, when we have happier thoughts, we set off those feel-good hormones, the oxytocin,
that
really coats our brain so that it makes our entire body feel better. And when our body feels better, we have a greater ability to think more productively, more usefully. So we make more bigger pictures of the things that make us happy instead of the things that we fear.
So can you give us an example of a particular client with a particular issue that you've helped them through?
Absolutely. So I had a client who came in with a fear of clowns, and she hadn't been to the circus in 14 years with her kids. She always sent her mother. So she's got all these pictures throughout the house with the kids and the grandma at the circus. So at some point, she just couldn't take it anymore, which is where I want them. I want them at a point where they're just ready for change. They're just so sick of having this problem because it's held them back so much. So when she came to see me, you know, I don't care about who, what, where, and when this all started, because that's just going to reinforce the fear. But once I started asking about, okay, so when you think about the clown, is it life-size or bigger than life? For her, it was bigger than life. It was those lips that she saw, like the size of an elephant, coming in towards her. And once I had her shrink it, blink it black and white, but then also remember the most dramatic time that she ever felt afraid of them, which is, get this, you're not going to believe this. She was walking down the streets of New York City, saw a clown, she got so scared, and she left her baby behind in the stroller.
Whoa.
Okay, you can only imagine how bad she felt doing that. So the good news is once we reversed that memory so that she heard all the sounds rewind, saw all the motions go backwards to the very beginning of the memory, and then blink that black and white, it changes the impact of the fear, because physiologically, the neurons actually flatten. And so by flattening them, you flatten the memory, which then loses the charge throughout your body, so you feel differently.
So,
and I'll always say that when you change how you think, it changes how you feel, which then changes how you do things.
Yes. So if someone is I know you have a book, Phobia Relief, From Fear to Freedom. If someone has a fear, what would be, I want the first step, they want to get there, and I want you to know buildingyourbest.com, you can go there so you can find out more, because you can go to seminars and speaking and things like that to be able to get more information. But start with a book, her book, Phobia Relief, From Fear to Freedom. It's on Amazon. It's already an international bestseller, so this is good stuff. But step number one, I'm really scared of spiders. And here's my funny story. So one time I went with my family to Hawaii, and I don't like bugs. I'm not an insect person. We go and check into the room, and there are bugs on the ceiling. Pretty big, you're in Hawaii. I'm standing in the middle of the floor. Now, the bugs aren't paying attention to me. I'm standing in the middle of the floor. I'm freaking out. I'm screaming. These bugs on the ceiling, I see them. My sons were having a field day. It was like so funny to them, because I'm freaking out. Seriously. I don't even know where it came from. What? And I haven't done that since. I don't know what came over me at that moment. I'll tell you, all I could see is these bugs crawling all over me, because we were checking into the room. It was like a little, you know, vacation condo. We were going to sleep, and I was not sleeping in that room because I could see those couple bugs on the ceiling. We had to move rooms. I was freaking out. Okay. Now, I got over it. However, let's say I have this fear of bugs, spiders, whatever it is, all the time. It's just crippling, because I was crippled at that moment. I could hardly move. I was stuck to that spot. What do you tell people about what number one step that they can take when they get into that situation? Because you got the woman, she left her baby. Oh my God. What do you say to do first when you get into a situation with where your phobia is?
Notice how it is that you're thinking, because just now you said that you saw the bugs crawling on you. Now, were they really crawling on you?
Oh, no.
They weren't, but that's what you thought. That's all you saw. Okay, so you literally saw the bugs crawling on you when they weren't. So, which means that it's not the bugs that really scared you, it was the idea of them crawling over your body when they really weren't.
Yes.
Okay, so which means that you can change the idea inside your head, right? And instead see the bugs on the wall. Now, I don't know that I would want to sleep in a room with bugs either, quite honestly. You know, I mean, fair enough to you. So, you know, to make yourself feel comfortable, I think you did the right thing. I don't know that anybody would stay in a room like that. But the truth is that if you know that they're harmless and you maybe didn't have a choice, then to think that, let's say the bugs stayed where they were supposed to, which was on the wall, I mean, what makes you think... I mean, I know your listeners find you very interesting. I find you very interesting. But what makes you think that the bugs would be so interested to be crawling on your skin? Okay.
All right, Calliope. Those bugs, they were interested. They're interested. It sounds funny standing here, but when I'm sitting there and I'm thinking back to that, it's just, now let me, I know you're a doctor of acupuncture also. Is there an acupuncture point to help people get over fears?
Absolutely. Well, there are plenty of points that can clear the mind and basically settle the spirit where you feel more relaxed. I mean, any acupuncture that's done will definitely settle your frame of mind to a more restful, more softer place. And sometimes I use it in combination, what I do, which is talk to people in such a way, you know, shed light on it. You start laughing about stuff. And where we just went with the bugs in the room, that's where I'm beginning. Because you want to start laughing about stuff so that your brain has greater flexibility in creating the change that you want. So that instead of those bugs coming towards you, you can push them away inside your mind so that they always stay away. And but by all means, knowing when you need to stay away from them for real as well. Now, the acupuncture, sometimes I do it when people have pain, that the stress is causing them pain. I just had a young woman come in. She had gastritis, and basically, it was how she was thinking about how she perceived people were treating her. And once I changed how big those people were inside their minds to something smaller, her pain went away.
Yes. And Calliope, so, yeah. And we're gonna have to bring it to a close. I want people to know how to find you. Calliope Barless, the daughter of Zeus. Calliope, licensed trainer of NLP, doctor of acupuncture, pro golfer, buildingyourbest.com. Calliope Barless, thank you for being on Wellness for Real World. This is Dr. Veronica, medical doctor, medical intuitive. Find me at drveronica.com. Wellness for the real world.